As we continue our study of the Ten Commandments for the 21st century, we see that the commandments have to do with our relationship with God, with our relationships with other people, with our attitudes towards things. But the fourth commandment is unique in that it has to do with our attitudes and our actions regarding time. And as we know, time is relative. Albert Einstein, who first pioneered the theory of relativity, remarked about time, there certainly seems less of it about than there used to be. Maybe you've heard yourself saying things like, I don't know where all the time goes. This week has simply flown by, or maybe this month, or this year. Time certainly does go quickly. I haven't had a moment to spare. We've probably all said or thought these things, maybe even in the last week. There's a lot more of those sayings I could add, but I don't have time for them, if you get the idea. Now, because time is basic, it's unchangeable, it is the most precious commodity we have. You see, you can always make more money. You can always replace things that maybe wear out or have been lost in some way. But time, you can never get back. Once time is spent, it's gone. And while we all have the same amount of time when you think of a day or a week or a month or a year, each one of us has a limited amount of time here on this earth. And none of us are told how much that will be. We are not given any guarantees when it comes to time. And so it's very important that we make the most of our time. The Bible talks about that. Paul writes in Ephesians, make the most of every opportunity. We need to be efficient when it comes to our time. Unfortunately, while we have gotten to be very good at managing other things, when it comes to the use of our time, we are an utter mess. Many of us struggle with this area of time management. How to get the most out of our time and our energies. And God speaks to that right here in the Ten Commandments. You see, our modern lifestyles are ruthless. It's a well-known fact, both by statistics and by personal experience, that although we now work harder and earn more, we have less time and energy to enjoy the things we've earned. As our working hours have increased, so have our stress levels. 60% of successful professionals say they suffer chronic stress or depression. 48% of top American corporate executives report that their lives are empty and meaningless. These are people who have reached the pinnacle. They have been climbing the corporate ladder and they've reached the top. And what have they discovered? Life is empty and meaningless. Why is that? I mean, technology has promised to make our lives easier. With all of the mechanisms we have that do things faster and with less human effort, it has not given us any more time. It just raises the expectation levels of what we're going to accomplish. So there's more pressure put on ourselves to do more. And all of this ceaseless rushing around inevitably is going to have an effect on us. If our bodies could speak to us today, what do you think it would say? I know it would say to me, get out and exercise. But I think for many of us, it might say, slow down. It might say, take a break. Would you be surprised to know that God is saying the same thing to you? That's what the fourth commandment is all about. God is telling you, take a break. Let's take a look at that fourth commandment found in Exodus chapter 20, beginning in verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. You notice that this is the longest of all of the commandments. First, the Sabbath is established. 6 days you will work, but the seventh day you will not work. Then you see the extent of the Sabbath. On it you shall not do any work. Not you, not your son or daughter, not your manservant, your maidservant, not even your animals. And then you see the explanation of the Sabbath. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. And yet there has been a controversy about the Sabbath ever since really the beginning of the church. And it goes right down into our modern day. Old Testament scholar Walter Kaiser writes, "The fourth commandment poses more difficulties than the other nine. Yet it was given for the liberation, not the bondage of humanity." And that thought, which echoes the words of Jesus we heard read in our scripture reading this morning. Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. That's important to remember throughout our message this morning. So, what is this controversy of the Sabbath? Well, it swirls around whether Christians ought to observe it or not. Donald Gray Barnhouse writes, 9 of the 10 commandments are reiterated in the New Testament, but the fourth commandment is specifically repudiated. Another resource states, the strict observance of the Sabbath, like circumcision, is no longer binding on Christians. To hear some speak, the Sabbath is meaningless to us. It's gone. It's something we don't have to give any thought to whatsoever. And yet there are those like 19th century evangelist D.L. Moody who wonders, how can men claim that one commandment's been done away with when they admit the other 9 are still binding? So you have this controversy. Should we or shouldn't we? And if we do, when? Some will say it should be the seventh day. Some say it's the first day of the week. Some are very legalistic about what you can do and can't do. How do we understand this? Well, I think we need to consider first the creation of the Sabbath. Many of those who believe that the Sabbath is out of date believe that it was done away with along with all the rest of the Mosaic Law. I got a little bit of a problem with that thought anyway, but if you notice, what's the first word of the fourth commandment? Remember. Remember. This is something that's already there. In fact, in Exodus chapter 16, you see that the Sabbath was already being observed by the Israelites. This isn't something new. The Sabbath was not established by the Mosaic Law. You go all the way back to Genesis, to the very dawn of creation, where you see the creation of the Sabbath. In Genesis chapter 2, beginning in verse 2, by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. This was not something for the Israelites. This is something for all mankind. By instituting this at creation, it's a provision for everyone. And you'll notice, even the way Moses states it in the Ten Commandments, it was not only for the Israelites. He said, even the alien among you, even your animals deserve a break. This is something for all. Now, that name Sabbath in Hebrew comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which means to cease, to rest. And that is primarily what it is. It's a normal cessation of the daily routine. It's stopping the treadmill, so to speak. Stopping the day after day after day after day. There needs to be a break. And that's what the Sabbath is there for. Now we note that God rested after creation. It's not because he was exhausted. He didn't come in after the day six and just say, "Whew, I'm beat. I need a break." He just stopped. God could have continued to create day after day after day. There's no limit to his power. There's no limit to his creativity. And so God could have continued to create, but he decided to stop. He determined to take a break. And in doing so, he instituted kind of a rhythm to life. There is a time to work, and there is a time to rest. There is a time to go, and there's a time to stop. And so God instituted this one day out of the week to take a break from what we normally do, to rest, to cease from our labors, so that we might be free from the tyranny of ourselves and the tyranny of our work. Even I needed to take a break. Now, we often neglect the first part of the commandment. 6 days you shall do your labor and do all your work. And to a real extent, a person's approach to the idea of rest is going to depend on his idea of work. If work is seen as a curse, then rest is going to be seen as a blessing, and the two are going to be opposites. But I don't believe that's the case at all. I believe that work and rest are both part of God's intention. Work is not a curse. If you go back to Genesis, you will see that God put Adam and Eve in the garden to work it before sin entered the world. Now, it is true that one of the consequences of sin is that work has been made harder. That's true. But God did not institute work as a penalty for sin. I always kind of had a problem with the idea of adding homework as a punishment. You know, homework is supposed to be how you learn, not just as a punishment. Well, God did not put work into our world as a punishment for sin. It's part of who we are. It's part of what we were created to do. We are created to work. But we are not machines. We were not created for work. We were not created just so that we would work. We were also created that we might enjoy God and have fellowship with Him. We must be careful that work doesn't become an end in itself. And it has for many people. We've developed a new ism. It's called workaholism. People are workaholics. They just work and they work and they work and they work some more. And it is literally fatal. Its toxic fruits are heart disease, hypertension, depression. Over in Japan, they have a word for it. It's called karoshi. It means death from overwork. And it is the second largest killer of working males. It accounts for 10% of the deaths in the nation of Japan from overwork. Like other addictions, workaholism consumes the addict's time, energy, and thoughts. Now, on the other hand, there are those who don't work at all. I think in our society, maybe we've gone to the other extreme. I can think of an awful lot of people that never have to worry about karoshi. Because they don't work at all. They do everything they can to avoid work, then expect the government to support them. How many of you have seen the commercial about the little boy who's playing video games and doing this and that, and he picks up the telephone and dials a number, and you see grandma going to get the phone, and she gets the phone and he says, "Hey grandma, how about another grape soda?" I love the expression she gives at the end of that commercial. It's just priceless. But how sad. We are raising a whole generation of Americans who don't know what work means. We're so afraid that they're not going to be happy with us. We don't put any expectations on our children. They're not even expected to make their bed or to keep their room or to do anything. It's wrong to have chores for them to do. Since when? Working is part of why we're created. Now, it's not the only thing, but it is an important thing. And if we do not work, we are not fulfilling the fourth commandment, because part of the command is 6 days you shall work. And so we are called upon to work. The book of Proverbs speaks of the sluggard no less than 13 times. And the sluggard is the person not who can't work, but who won't work. There's a big difference. I understand there are people who, for physical limitations, cannot work. I have no problem with that. I'm talking about able-bodied people who refuse to work. And what does the Bible say about them? If you will not work, you will not eat. So work is an important part. It's an important component of our lives. G. Campbell Morgan writes, "The will of God for man is that he should work. It is also that at the seventh day interval he should cease his work and worship. Each is a complement of the other. He who never works is unfitted for worship. He who never worships is rendered incapable of work." Both of these things are important if we want to fulfill God's will. In Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 to 15, it's very clear. The Sabbath was given for the sake of those who need rest after hard work. These are people who are out there day after day doing their thing. They need a break. Work is as much a part of the fourth commandment as is rest. And we need to take that break. Here it says 1 day out of 7. And I understand there's going to be those who, for reasons of their work, cannot make the usual day of worship. They have to work on Sundays. I understand that. Those are things that cannot be avoided in some lines of work. So I would suggest you make another day. You might find this hard to believe, but Sunday is not my Sabbath. Sunday is my busiest day of the week. My Sabbath is Monday. It's usually by Saturday I'm exhausted. I need that break. But you know, for years I never took one. For years, I never had a day off. Oh, maybe here and there you'd catch a Saturday where there wasn't a wedding or there wasn't something else going on. But there were times where I would go literally weeks and weeks and months, never have a day off. And there's a lot of people in ministry and full-time Christian service that think, I don't need that. You know, I'm working for the Lord. He'll give me the strength that I need. Well, yeah, but he also said you need to take a break. And so I'll warn you right now, unless it's a matter of life and death, you're probably not going to catch me on a Monday. I may not even answer my phone. So leave a message. Understand, that's important. And there are times when I have to work on a Monday. And that's fine, I'll do that. But I'll tell you what, I can tell the difference. I can tell it in my own strength levels, in not just physically, but emotionally, being able to concentrate intellectually. We need to take that break. God has created us in that way. Now, I don't want to give you the impression that your day off is just a day to sleep. Okay? Sleep and rest are both essential, but they're not the same. And you might find that rest for you involves a lot of physical labor. For somebody like me, whose job is not always physically taxing, actually getting out and doing some physical exertion is actually a form of rest. Why? Because it's different. It's a break from the everyday. And I've known many people who have kind of office-type jobs. When they get their day off, they're out working in the yard. You know, they're in their garden. They're out, you know, mowing the grass, you know, whatever. I don't do any of that stuff. But, you know, there are people who do. And they find that very refreshing. Even though they might be out there sweating and working hard, it's refreshing because it's given their mind a break. It's given their eyes a break from the computer screens. It's given their back a break from those office chairs. How you do it is up to you. But we need to realize that it's important. We need to take that break. Now, you figure this is all well and good, right? God created us with a rhythm that allows us a break from the everyday grind of living. I mean, what can go wrong with that? But as one author puts it, one of the extraordinary abilities of the human race is the ability to totally mess things up. And that's what we did with the Sabbath. You would have thought that a simple divine ruling about having a day of rest would be hard to damage. However, with perverse ingenuity, generations of people from all sorts of cultures have managed to turn this command from being a liberating gift of God to a wearisome day-long obstacle course. This happened at the time of Jesus. When he came on the scene, the Pharisees had added so many things to the Sabbath. There were a total of 1,521 rules for the Sabbath day. Things you could not do. All things that were added to what God had instituted. Ensuring that no work took place on the Sabbath had become very hard work indeed. By the time of Jesus, the Pharisees had transformed the Sabbath into something God had never intended. They added a long list of specific prohibitions. They fall under 39 categories. Are you ready for this? Here's a list of things you cannot do on the Sabbath, according to the Pharisees. Carrying, burning, extinguishing, finishing, writing, erasing, cooking, washing, sewing, tearing, knotting, untying, shaping, plowing, planting, reaping, harvesting, threshing, winnowing, selecting, sifting, grinding, kneading, combing, spinning, dyeing, chain stitching, warping, weaving, unraveling, building, demolishing, trapping, shearing, slaughtering, skinning, tanning, smoothing, and marketing. And no, I'm not going to say that again. Isn't it strange that resting should be so burdensome? The joyous celebration of creation that God had given to mankind disappeared. The Sabbath became a day of legalism. The means had become the end. God's idea of the Sabbath became a burden instead of a blessing. And that's why you see so often Jesus squaring off against the Jewish leaders over the Sabbath. It's not that he was destroying the Sabbath day. At no point does Jesus ever say, do not observe the Sabbath. At no point in the New Testament are we told, do not observe the Sabbath. What we are told is don't make it a religion. Don't make it so ritualistic that it is a burden and not a liberation. Jesus felt free to heal, to pick grain, to cast out demons on the Sabbath. Now, the religious leaders said, oh, you can't do that. That's wrong. Jesus said, says who? It's certainly not in the law of Moses. In fact, he goes back to the law of Moses to show you can do good on the Sabbath. He wasn't against God's law. He wasn't against the Ten Commandments. He was against the perversion of God's law by the Jewish leaders. And that's what we need to understand about all that Jesus taught. Jesus did not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. What he came against was the legalism of Judaism, what it had devolved into, which was far away from what God had originally intended. And that is why, as we read earlier, Jesus said, "Man, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." I like how the New Living Translation renders that. The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. That's good. Because that's how the Pharisees had turned it around, to make it something for man to fulfill rather than the Sabbath to serve mankind. Now, unfortunately, the attitude of the Pharisees has filtered down into more modern history as well. You remember the blue laws? Most of them are gone by now, but it used to be nothing could be open on a Sunday. You weren't allowed to do anything on a Sunday. You could be arrested for crossing your eyes on a Sunday, it seemed. It was legislated. The Puritans did their best to legislate piety, especially with the Sabbath laws. Evidently, they felt the only way to worship God was to make sure no one enjoyed Sunday. So they took all the pleasure out of it. Before long, these laws of the church became the law of the land. And as one writer put it, for many children, Sundays were about as welcome as a cobra in a cradle. D.L. Moody, who I mentioned earlier, he said, "When I was a boy, the Sabbath lasted from sundown on Saturday to sundown on Sunday. And I remember how we boys used to shout when it was over because it was the worst day of the week." Isn't that sad? Isn't it sad that the one day God says to set aside to rest, to enjoy Him, to enjoy one another, would be turned into the worst day of the week? And there's even Christians today that have that attitude about Sundays. Instead of saying, getting out of bed and saying, "Oh, good Lord, it's Sunday morning." They say, "Oh, good Lord, it's Sunday morning. I got to go to church." We've turned it into something it was never intended to be. So how do we approach the fourth commandment? What about celebrating the Sabbath? Is it wrong for Christians to do so? Is it wrong for us not to do so? Well, I think we need to understand something very basic about Moses' law. First of all, understand that the law was not Moses' idea. We call it the Mosaic Law, but in fact, it is the law of God. So let's get that clear. This wasn't Moses or anybody else's idea, humanly speaking. Moses simply wrote it down as God gave it to him. So this is God's law, number one. But within that law, you see three different areas, called the civil, the ceremonial, and the moral. The civil law were the laws that you lived under when you lived in the nation of Israel. If you lived in the land, this is what you had to do. It's very similar to our own laws. Think about Illinois law, and there's the law of Iowa, and there's law of Indiana. If you're living in the state of Illinois, you don't have to worry about Iowa law and Indiana law because they don't apply to you. You don't live in their jurisdiction. But if you were to drive through Indiana, you'd better be aware of their law and you better live by it because even though you may not be a resident of there, you still are in their jurisdiction. That's the civil law. Now, none of us live in ancient Israel. So you cannot be put to death for violating the Sabbath law, which was part of the civil code in the law of Moses. Then there's the ceremonial law. Ceremonial law was all about worship. This is how the tabernacle was set up. This was about the service of the priest, the sacrifices that had to be made. Remember, these are all God's ideas. This was God's law. But Jesus fulfilled all of the ceremonies of the law. He fulfilled the sacrifices. He is our priest. He has fulfilled this. The moral law, however, is based on God's unchanging character, and it's universal. It applies to everybody. When God said, "Do not murder and do not steal," He wasn't only speaking to the Israelites. It's true for all people. And the moral law still stands. You say, all right, where does the Sabbath fall? Well, it's kind of all the above. There is the civil component of the law, as I mentioned, because to break the Sabbath law was a capital crime in the old nation of Israel. You could be put to death for it. There's the ceremonial part of the law in that it was restricted to one day, the seventh day. But there is the moral aspect of the law that we all need a break. We all need to take time to rest our bodies and our minds and our spirits. We need to take time out to worship God in the midst of our work. That hasn't changed. And in that sense, yes, I think we do need to celebrate the Sabbath. Now, it doesn't have to be a matter of legislation. It doesn't need to be a matter of legalism. But I do believe that it is wrong to suggest that God's laws, His moral laws, no longer apply. Dr. Nelson Bell, who was the father-in-law of Billy Graham, wrote, "The Ten Commandments have never been abrogated. It is still wrong to kill, to steal, to commit adultery, and to deny the validity of one day in seven as a day of rest and spiritual refreshment is to miss one of God's greatest gifts to mankind." To say that nine commandments still apply, but one doesn't, it's to fracture the Ten Commandments in a way I don't believe God ever intended. So I would say that for Christians, the Sabbath rules are dead, but the Sabbath principles remain. We still need to take that time. And it may not be the seventh day or the first day. It might be the fourth day of the week. But you need to take time. Away from your work, away from the regular routine. Spend time with God, spend time with others, spend time doing things that will restore your strength. It's my strong belief based on the Bible, but also supported on my own experience. But for the sake of our health, our sanity, our families, our relationships, our society, we still need a Sabbath. We need to take a break. At the most basic level, a day off of every week is good for us, mentally and physically. It gives us an opportunity to relax the pace at which our body's machinery is working. We need it. And I believe that if we want to be good caretakers of what God has given us in our own physical bodies in the area of time. You say, oh, rest is a waste of time. No, it's an investment in time. Because by resting, you're going to be better equipped to do the work you need to do. It's actually an investment of time. Because we are frail, spiritually, mentally, physically, the Lord created a special day for our benefit. That's why He told us to guard it well. The Sabbath was made because we need it. And when we refuse to cooperate with God's laws for our body's proper maintenance, we run the increasing risk of malfunction. Our modern lifestyle of hustle and bustle puts us in what one psychologist calls universal fatigue. We're tired all the time. We get up in the morning and say, "It can't be morning already. I'm still tired." In the middle of such overwhelming pressures, we need to take that break, reevaluate our lives, because we find that if we don't order our lives by priorities, it will be ordered by pressure. And that'll be something outside of our realm of control. God's claim on our Sabbath reminds us that all of our time is a gift. It's a gift from Him. And we should use it in a way that pleases Him. There's a hymn, and you'll find it in the hymnal, but they changed the words. So you'll find it in your bulletin. I'd like to close our service with this. Take my life and let it be. And you'll notice that in that hymn it talks about, you know, take my hands, take my lips, take my feet, you know, every part of us. But something that was left out of our hymnal, and it's in our bulletin instead, is the last part of verse 1. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to Thee. Take my moments and my days. Let them flow in ceaseless praise. Will you give God your time this morning? Will you say to God, I recognize that You have created within us the need to take time out, to take time for rest, to take time for worship. It truly is an investment of time. Will we do that for our Lord?